It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
I think Matthews has probably taken over the reins as the most popular, most talked about, most well-known person in the city. There are so many 34 Maple Leaf jerseys in the city right now. It's astonishing to me that it's this big this quickly.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Final hour Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, but now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Dave Poulin. It's more the Dave Poulin show the past couple of weeks, because, Pooley, you were in here working, and I was on vacation.
Yeah, I had a few sessions in here with Scotty Mack. I like to keep up with things. It's good. It's good. A couple times a week.
You enjoying yourself?
I'm a sports fan, too, you know. I mean, I really am. I like all sports, and I'm watching them anyway. I'm paying attention to what goes on. And as we talked about, the Twitter leads you into whatever you're missing if you really want to pay attention. But I'm a sports fan. I like to watch golf. I like to watch baseball. I like to have it on in the background. I'm a big football guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I follow it all the way across. I follow CFL.
Yeah, I was saying this off the top. Like, when I take time off, I take time off in the summer. Generally, Labor Day to July 1, I'm working. But when I get away, I try to get away. But I'm a sports fan. It's kind of, this is all I know. Like, that's my hobby. You know, like, I talk about it for a living, so I approach it differently. When I'm off, it is more of, hey, it's in the background. If I miss something, it's not the end of the world. I don't have to think of it analytically. I don't have to approach a game tonight in terms of, okay, what is going to be the take for me tomorrow? What's the angle? What's the poll
question?
Totally
different. You just relax and enjoy it.
Very different. Yeah. You know, if I miss something, whatever, who cares?
But see, it was a problem when I played, because my hobby when I played was sports. So you weren't really getting away from what you did for a living.
Would you watch other hockey games?
No, I didn't watch other hockey games. But don't forget, they weren't as available as they are now. You didn't have the NHL package back then. I didn't watch other NHL games when I played. But I watched other sports. That was my hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I went to other sporting events. I mean, I played in some pretty good cities and for other teams. When I arrived in Philadelphia, that same year I arrived, the Sixers won the NBA championship and the Phillies lost in the World Series in 83. So
were the Eagles any good?
Yeah, the Eagles were pretty good. Jaworski was there, and then Randall Cunningham had some really good years there. So, no, they had some good years.
Yeah, I guess actually that would have been, like, Reggie White would have been in Philly.
Reggie White and that Buddy Ryan.
Right.
Buddy Ryan came in 86.
Someone came out with a list of the greatest defenses of all time. And I believe the Philly team, I don't remember which year, but it would have been with Buddy Ryan and Reggie White,
so
was
Reggie
ranked
White,
number one.
You know who was on that defensive line was Mike Golic.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Mike and Mike in the morning.
Yeah, Golic was big on that line.
Yeah.
And so then I go to Boston. Well, Roger Clemens is in his prime. The big three are still there with the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And actually,
the Pats, though, completely
irrelevant.
There was
no football team.
No one cared. They were brutal forever.
There was Irving Fryer, you know, getting arrested at the Foxy Lady down in Providence.
And now you go down there in the Pats. I wouldn't say they own the town, and I don't know enough about Boston. I'm not from there. I don't live there. But it was always, like, when I was growing up, it was a Red Sox town. Everything was about the Red Sox. And then they won their World Series, and they became competitive every year, and it's almost like they lost their standing because they weren't the lovable losers anymore.
They weren't.
So if it's a championship city, we're going to go with the champ who has been the champ the most, and that's Brady in the past.
They've won championships, though. That's the difference. I mean, the Bruins won it in 2011. The Red Sox have won it. You know, the Celtics look like they're coming again, but they've won so often.
Yeah. They won when Garnett and Ray Allen.
You talk about a city of champions.
Nothing matches.
Pretty hard
Boston.
To argue.
I can't imagine in my lifetime I'll ever witness a 15-year period where one city owns the sporting world the way Boston.
Talk about a parade tariff on the city. Holy smokes!
Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you're going to win titles, you have to have legends. But they bring out legendary athletes to a completely new level.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, Brady, I think he's the greatest player I've ever seen. Can people make cases for Lawrence Taylor or for Montana or for Reggie White? Sure you can, but you can make a very strong case. He's the greatest player of all time.
And it's usually with your immediate generation
sure.
what you go with on that.
Right.
But in terms of a great sports town, it really is. But it's also, I played there for almost 4 years, and we had great success when I played there. It is the most provincial, parochial sports town.
Oh, they don't care about anything else.
Nothing else exists.
Nothing
Why would
else
they care?
Exists.
They wouldn't watch a baseball game, the greatest baseball game in the history of baseball between two of the greatest teams, if the Red Sox weren't playing, would be irrelevant.
Well, I was thinking about that last night because I've heard that. Like, I've interviewed people from Boston about usually, well, it's always Boston angles. Why would you have someone right. on front? But sometimes we'll take the conversation wherever we go, and it's like, well, how do people down there feel about what's going on with
quizzical.
Like, why do we care?
Yeah, why would we even consider
like maybe
about
New
that?
York? You know, New York's different because of the connection, Boston, New York. Maybe they're tracking what the Yankees are doing.
No, they're not.
The Jets, no. Because I was watching the Red Sox Yankee game last night, and that kind of dawned
now,
on me.
Think of what you just said. Yes, you're in the sports business, but you flip around. Oh, the Yankees playing the Red Sox. That's interesting.
That's something I want to
Red
watch.
Sox fan would never flip around and go,
oh, it's Giants Dodgers tonight.
Oh, great. I've
got to track that.
Kershaw's never. On the mound? Oh, really? He's pitching no-hitter?
Yeah.
Oh, click. I got to go.
They really don't
care.
Well,
there's a rerun of the Bruins game on. I'm telling you.
Yeah, they really don't care.
They don't.
Surprising? I mean, is Philly the same way?
Philly is with a hardened edge the same way. It's a more blue-collar pride type of town.
But do they track Pittsburgh because they're in the same state?
No, they don't. They don't. But they're not as... They'll watch other sporting events more so than people in Boston would.
Yeah, Boston. Parochial is the perfect word. They don't care. You listen to radio down there, they got two sports radio stations. All it is Sox, Celtics, yeah. Bruins, Pats. Yeah, that is it.
Yeah. Might get into BU or BC if something really good were going on there. But
well, and Goodell's going to be there opening night. To kick off the season in New England, Thursday night, Goodell is showing up for the first time since the Brady suspension fiasco. And to chat about that, because Goodell's in the news because of what's going on with Ezekiel Elliott. There's a bunch of different things going on in the NFL. Camps are officially underway. Our next guest, I believe, has been down in Atlanta tracking the Falcons. They're familiar with the Pats. Last time they were on the field, they had a 28-3 lead. He's a Sporting News NFL columnist, also doing stuff with SiriusXM NFL Radio. Here's our good buddy, Alex Marvez. What's happening, Alex?
Mr. Hayes.
He's all choked up about
good
you being back.
Good start right off the hop. Like,
he's all choked up.
Right when we're back on TV, my first show in 2 weeks, we're waiting for the phones to...
You have that effect?
I do. When I was away,
Alex was emotional. Alex was emotional because you were back. No glitches when you were gone. Not
well,
one.
I want to get his take on how Goodell, what kind, like how open and honest and approachable will he be in New England?
Well, don't forget he had a pretty good friendship with Mr. Kraft before this all started.
Right, but do you think, like, I guess they, like, he's going to have security with him. He would everywhere he goes.
Yes, he would.
But do you think they'll just kind of slide him in the back door? He'll sit up in a box
yeah,
and then he'll leave?
Yeah, he'll be profile.
You think he'll have a higher profile
he'll
than
have
that?
A profile. He will.
He'll be on the sidelines.
He's
the
commissioner
he'll
of the
do
league.
Interviews.
He'll be himself. Whatever he normally does, he'll do.
I guess he's got to do media.
Of course.
Because the media in that town is very parochial as well. I mean, this applies to every media, every local media. They're about their market, right? Like, they're an extension of their market.
Yeah, it's hard to describe them as being more so than any other city.
Right.
It's more the fans. It really is the fans more than the media. Because local media are local media everywhere they are.
But they're still not homers.
It's a pretty big national media, though. Bob Ryan... The great Will McDonough.
But they were still affiliated with the Boston Globe, like, first and foremost.
They were, but they hit the national stride. I mean, you could say they were the first group to go national. Will McDonough might have been one of the first to go to the national media with mm-hmm. ESPN as the baseball guy, and then he was full coverage of national.
But even as a journalist, like, that's your town. That's where you live. You have to be, I can speak from my own experience, you're going to be affected somehow by your surroundings. By the people you interact with. I interact with Leaf fans all the time. I'm going to have a different spin on the Leafs than some guy living in
Absolutely.
Chicago would.
Absolutely.
Now, it doesn't mean I'm a homer or whatever, but...
Well, you've already admitted you'll watch the Red Sox-Yankees game. Like, you'll flip around and watch other sporting events.
I will.
You're a sports fan first and a sports host who works in Toronto. Whereas that exact order of events wouldn't be the same in Boston.
Maybe it'd be a little bit different.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I mean,
Alex is so choked up, he's gone.
I know. I don't know if we're going to get him back. We'll see. I don't know. The Ezekiel Elliott story continues. Do we have him? All right, Alex, you got us, or what's going on with the phone?
I hope so.
You're back.
How are you?
I'm good, man. We haven't spoken in a while. How's it going?
Indeed. Well, better than Ezekiel Elliott, right? And indeed, Roger Goodell, in the middle of another storm, although he did recuse himself from the investigation, basically just letting others assemble facts and such. And, you know, it's just an interesting time for the NFL right now. And again, it's this power, Article 46 in the union agreement that they have with the NFL that gives Roger Goodell this type of power. You don't have to be guilty of committing a crime. You don't have to be charged with anything. But if the NFL feels there's an abundance of evidence that shows that you did something against their rules, well, guess what? You're subject to suspension. And that is exactly what this Ezekiel Elliott case is, and also the big reason that Ezekiel Elliott is going to be fighting this. And, you know, and it's going to get ugly. I mean, they're going to be attacking the accuser, at least that's what it sounds like from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. But, you know, it looks like the Ezekiel Elliott side is going to be calling into question the accuser and say, hey, look, she's the one who fabricated stories. She's the one who told the Columbus Police Department I dragged her out of a car. That didn't happen. She was the one who threatened to embarrass me if I didn't stay with her. Those types of things. So this one has the potential to continue to get really ugly as Zeke Elliott fights to get back on the football field.
Well, and you mentioned Goodell recusing himself of the investigation. That news breaking officially today that he wasn't even in the room during the Elliott hearing, and he didn't even interview the alleged victim in his situation. And this is intriguing on so many different levels, because the Players Association, you can't have it both ways. If you don't want him to be the judge, jury, and executioner, then you can't also come back and say, well, wait a minute, this is a he said, she said situation, and he's got to listen to both of them. Like, how will the PA, what kind of leg do they have to stand on here if they were fighting for him to recuse himself, and now it appears as if they don't want that to be the case. They want him to listen to the testimony because it's he said, she said in this particular circumstance.
Right. And, you know, this is a tough situation for the NFL Players Association, but one that they put themselves into when they agreed to this in the last labor agreement. And Roger Goodell was loath to give up his disciplinary power. He doesn't want to be a commissioner that has no clothes, so to speak. He never wants to be in a position where, listen, if I feel a guy has done something wrong, I'm not in position to punish this player. And, you know, when we talk about this thing, too, let's not forget 1%. 2% of the NFL tops are the ones that are getting into this type of trouble. And let's not forget, when you read through what it is that the NFL wrote to Ezekiel Elliott explaining the suspension, basically they were saying, Zeke, you're doing things wrong off the field. You need to get your life in order. It's the type of thing like when they told Adrian Peterson how to live his life, for example, and you need to go to this type of counseling and you need to do these things. I mean, this is basically an employer laying this out to the employee. And again, it gets a little bit weird. I think it may be the best way to put it. It's a little bit goofy. It's a little bit off, according to the way most employer-employee relationships work. But nonetheless, this is how it is in the NFL. So Zeke Elliott and his group is going to have to convince the commissioner that basically this woman was lying, and that the people who investigated this on behalf of the NFL were inaccurate, that they were wrong, that they believe someone that had provided false photos, you know, pictures of bruises that the Zeke Elliott side claims were old, the ones that he didn't inflict, and that, you know, that they were right and the police department was wrong in Columbus, Ohio, because they were the ones that, again, did not choose to file criminal charges against Zeke Elliott. But let's not forget, Ben Roethlisberger never charged, never convicted, yet he also served a suspension. Why? Because the NFL thought there was an abundance of evidence that said he was doing bad things. Let's straighten this guy out.
Well, and there's such a similarity between these two circumstances, and I do get that same impression that you have, Alex, that this is an accumulation of a lot of different things going on, and they want to send a message to Elliott that, hey, we know you party a lot. We know you're into clubs a lot. We know what's going on, and we want you to slow your roll. And they're doing it not in a cavalier way. I mean, I'm sure they have evidence here. They're not doing this whimsically because, hey, why not? But they understand this guy is incredibly marketable, much like Roethlisberger was. But as a rookie, he was a rookie of the year candidate, hit the ground running. He plays for the number one team in the league in terms of finances and marketability. How do you think this affects Elliott's marketability going forward, that with this six-game suspension, they're also saying, hey, we believe you're a domestic abuser. I mean, how will this affect the way the league decides to market a young superstar?
Well, and that's a tricky question unto itself. Listen, the NFL loves a redemption story, right? And we've had players that have done worse. Ray Lewis is an example of that, right? Ben Roethlisberger, to an extent, is an example of that. And he was able to rebound from the things that he was accused of. You know, we have Adam Pac-Man Jones, who's brought in to speak to players by the NFL. And this guy was involved in a shooting that left a man paralyzed in Nevada at a strip club over pretty much a riot that Pac-Man Jones started. So, you know, again, I think we're a forgiving culture, and I think that you feel that way. And I'll be honest with you, too, and I hate to sound callous with this, I think there are fans, some of them just simply don't care. I think that they want Ezekiel Elliott on the field because they're Cowboys fans or because they play fantasy football, or they simply don't believe that the young lady, that her accusations are. So I think there's some sympathy toward Ezekiel Elliott as well. But, you know, listen, the thing is that I agree with you, that I think they feel that there's some things Zeke Elliott is doing wrong off the field, and that he is really running perilously close to imploding away from football, and that he needs to get his life in order, maybe get some psychological treatment, maybe just understand that, you know, that the way the NFL sees it, playing for us is a right, not a privilege, or a privilege, not a right, and, you know, we'll see how he responds in kind.
Alex, is this layered process that I'm reading about with Lisa Friel and Kia Roberts, former New York prosecutors for sexual assault and domestic violence issues, and Todd Jones, the league's special counsel for conduct, the layers before all of this was recommended to Goodell. Is this new?
Well, after the Josh Brown thing, and what an embarrassment that was to the NFL. After the Ray Rice thing, what an embarrassment that was to the NFL. Yeah, I think that they have added layers, so to speak, to try to do investigations properly and correctly. And listen, one thing that the NFL is doing right now, they're being lauded for this, okay? And there's people in the media who you know, were critical of Roger Goodell before in the Deflategate situation, for example, with Tom Brady. But in this case, they're saying, oh, well, this guy, you know, you look at the photos and you look at the situation and Zeke Elliott must be guilty. I just don't, again, when you have someone who isn't even charged and to give them a 6-game suspension, and they allude to the fact that something happened at a St. Patrick's Day party, a thing where he pulled down a woman's top, it's not criminal. You see what I'm saying? Like, it may be poor taste, it may be bad judgment, but Ezekiel Elliott didn't break the law with that. She didn't file charges. You know, she wasn't thrilled about it, but she didn't seem, you know, all that upset about it either. And again, I'm not saying he was right in doing so, but I just think that the NFL, coming off of the situation with Josh Brown, looking like idiots because they didn't investigate it properly, and they give the guy a 1-game suspension when really the guy should have never played football again, and at this point I don't think he is. I think they're looking to maybe make an example of somebody in Zeke Elliott. Wrong place, wrong time.
With Alex Marvis, SiriusXM NFL Radio, and Sporting News NFL columnist here on Overdrive. As for the kneeling or sitting during anthems, it obviously was a part of the news over the weekend. Marshawn Lynch sitting during the anthem. Martellus Bennett has come out and said he's going to be doing the same thing. Yet Kaepernick continues to be the poster boy. I think he always will be the poster boy of this situation. And what I'm curious to find out, Alex, is whether or not this story will continue to be a daily news item throughout this season. It was for the majority of last season, if not all of last season. You know, the era we live in now, it's all about clicks, it's all about ratings, it's all about interest. You mentioned just a moment ago, not many people care. You don't know how many people really care about what these guys are doing off the field. Or when the whistles aren't actually in play. As a journalist yourself who's written about this, talked about this a lot, do you get the impression like this anthem story will continue to apply all year, or is it potentially running out of gas in terms of the coverage that will come with it?
No, I don't think it's running out of gas. I just think that the question is, are people going to be as eloquent speaking about it as Michael Bennett, you know, who was very upset? You know, what happened earlier this week in Virginia, you know, in Charlotte, you know, in that area was just such, I mean, it is something that infuriated people. And, you know, what we don't know is, for example, with Marshawn Lynch, why was he sitting? Is this something that he had? Was it in relation to Charlottesville, or was it something else that prompted him to sit during the national anthem? You know, Michael Bennett made it very clear, and he's upset about a lot of the way things are going in this country. Listen, in the United States, as you know, people are very polarized right now as to what is happening. You know, with the, you know, the racial outbursts, you know, outbursts and the, you know, alt-right or whatever they want to call it, the white supremacist, all that sort of thing that's going on. So I think because that is part of a story, and really that at this time last year, that really wasn't part of the narrative to all this. It may have been an underlying current, but I don't think a lot of people saw it. Now you're talking mainstream front and center. So I think that is going to draw some attention. And, yeah, Colin Kaepernick continues to take the brunt for it. He was the first guy who did it. But let's not forget, Colin did some other things along the way to you know, irritate some people. You know, wearing socks featuring police officers as pigs. That's one of them, to try to proclaim that Fidel Castro had a great education system down in Cuba with his oppressive regime. That wasn't exactly brilliant either. And then when you tweet something out comparing police department behavior today to slave patrols, and you post a picture of that badge on Twitter and a police badge, well, you're not going to make a whole lot of friends, I think, in law enforcement, and you're not going to make a whole lot of friends among team management. So Colin Kaepernick has every right to express his opinion in the U.S. You know, we have freedom of speech, but there also can sometimes be a price to pay for that, and he's paying that right now through his unemployment.
Thank you, Alex. Always appreciate it, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Hey, and I'm glad my phone finally worked. Thank you.
You got it, man. There he is, Alex Marvez from Sporting News and SiriusXM NFL Radio. Kaepernick, as I said, has been the poster boy of this whole movement, and he will continue to be...
The unemployed Colin Kaepernick.
And we're getting closer and closer to
He's gonna play this season.
You think he will?
I do.
I've always believed that he will. The closer we get, though, the more and more I wonder if it's actually going to happen.
Yeah, the Miami one was a big one for me, the Dolphins.
But as he said, you come out and speak glowingly in any fashion about Castro in that market,
yeah,
it's a no-guy right off the hop. You're not going to be able to battle through that. Fairly or unfairly, it's not going to happen in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm...
Can he be done? Could he be done in the NFL?
I think he could be.
Wow.
I think he could be. And again, because I think it amplifies the quarterback position. It's just, it's above and beyond every other position.
Right.
You know, other players, whether you're a running back, a wide receiver, a defensive end.
He's the pitcher.
He's the guy.
But he's got to be the smartest guy, too.
They're held to different standards.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them artificial, a lot of them made up, unwritten rules. You have to do this compared to everyone else on the roster. But that's just always been a part of the program. And I think it's... He's paying the price for the position he plays to an extent.
You know, even as a part of the team, Brian, they sit in a room with their offensive coordinator. A lot of the week, they don't even see their teammate.
They're on their own.
Yeah.
Like, you see video hard knocks and stuff. And
yeah. They're in a room with the other quarterbacks, the other two quarterbacks, the offensive coordinator, maybe the quarterback's coach, mm-hmm. and they game plan.
And they sit with the head coach exclusively on their own.
And they game plan. That's mm-hmm. what they do.
You don't see a cornerback walking in and sitting with the head coach for 3 hours yep. every week. Doesn't happen. But he also, in a way, you know, he soaked up all the energy, the emotion, the commentary about this very polarizing topic to the point now where he's supplied the shield for other guys to do it as well for whatever reasons that they have,
right.
Whether it's Bennett or Lynch or whoever. A bunch of players did it, and I think a bunch more will this year.
Bennett really talked about it a lot in detail about exactly why he was doing it, whereas Marshawn Lynch has just been Marshawn Lynch, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I don't know this yet. I'll have to look this up, and I'll be curious to find out if it has happened or if it hasn't, if it will in the future, if any white players have taken a knee. I'm not aware of any. And that's, if that happens, like if Chris Long, who's from Charlottesville and has spoken openly about the story that took place over the weekend, Chris Long, Howie Long's kid, second overall pick, went to Virginia. If he comes out and takes a knee,
mm-hmm.
then the story takes a completely different turn. Because as of now, it's been all black players. But that again, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, everyone's been so focused on Kaepernick, the other stories have just kind of happened. It's like, oh, whatever. That's Marshawn Lynch being Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, with Lynch.
Or Michael Bennett, you know,
whatever Lynch does is...
It's like people just kind of push it aside. Yeah. And other players that are doing it that aren't household names, it's like, whatever, I'm not going to write about it because I don't think people are going to read it. Like, I don't know. I'm genuinely curious to find out whether this story continues on a daily basis throughout the whole year, or if people are, like, columnists and radio hosts are going to get to a point where they're like, are there so many players doing it? Whatever, forget it. We're not going to talk about it all the time. Do you hold every player's feet to the fire and ask them for an explanation?
Yeah,
doesn't seem to be happening.
So many players just don't want any part of being involved in it.
They'll do it, but they're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Kaepernick, whether you like the explanation or not, has been willing to give you an answer on it. And to be fair to him, did not publicly announce he was going to do it. Was doing it privately. The camera spotted
it. They called attention.
Went to him and said, hey, what was that all about? Right. And then he told them.
Right. Because he's the quarterback. If the left tackle's doing that, the camera doesn't pick him up.
Wouldn't even be looking for him. Dirk Harris will join us. Jay's back in action. Rays in town for four. Pooley, you're calling a four-game sweep.
I'm calling a four-game sweep.
Calling a four-game sweep. We'll see what Dirk has to say about that. And I was watching the Yankee-Sox game last night.
Because you're not from Boston.
Because I'm not from Boston, and I'm generally interested, and I'm looking for entertainment. It was a brilliant game. Aaron Judge has struck out 30 games in a 30 row.
30 straight games.
30 straight games.
Now, I did not see the home run derby, but he was in it, correct?
He won it.
Okay, and his batting average has plummeted.
He has dropped, I believe, 40 points, which is more than anyone else in baseball over that span since the All-Star break.
Standing
concern about your swing being thrown out of whack.
You change your swing for a night, and it affects the rest of your season.
But here's how incredible this guy's first half was. He still has an OPS up over 1,000.
It's crazy.
Still got 35 home runs, right?
30 games in a row striking out.
Like, Sale got him twice last night. I think Kimbrel got him late. Like, he looked like he was off, and he's looked off. And I think this is probably a lesson
still
for people that
young
were
in this kid's career.
But a lesson for people to proclaim someone that quickly the face of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
I always said it said more about baseball than it did about Aaron Judge. Judge can't control that. But the
there
fact
was a
that
void there.
We're so quick to anoint someone.
Yeah, but look at it. It's New York. Look at the body. Look at that ridiculous body.
But look at
the name.
Look at Mike
Everything
Trout.
About it.
Look at Mike Trout. Trout is already an all-time great ball player.
Yeah, but he's not 6'6". He doesn't look like that.
But the performance,
doesn't have
though,
the name like it. That.
Mike Trout's got a name
play
that
in
rings
New York.
Out. I hear you. And that's baseball.
That's what it is.
You have to be in New York, Boston,
Dodgers.
Chicago, or L.A., but the Dodgers, not the Angels.
The Dodgers, not
in
the
order
Angels.
To be a postman.
You live down the road,
you're,
then the West Coast affects
pretty
you.
Quickly.
It doesn't if you're Clayton Kershaw. Does if you're Mike Trout.
Right. But Judge, like Bellinger's been better.
Yeah.
And Bellinger's a Dodger.
Yeah.
Yet it's been all about Aaron Judge. And we'll see what Dirk has to say about
that. Because it was the cycling up of the Yankees, too. You're coming back into the cycling up of the Yankees.
Big time.
He's
but
the next charge.
The Dodgers won 43 of 50 games. It's not like the...
It's pretty good.
Like, the Dodgers have been a perennial playoff team for years now, but they are performing at a level that is almost unprecedented. That was... Unprecedented.
Yes.
And Bellinger, he gets, I mean, listen, people talk about him. They're aware of him. He's
not
going
like
to run away
talk
with
about
the
Judge.
NL MVP or the Rookie of the Year. He might win the MVP, but he's not getting the Judge treatment.
Isn't that funny?
And you could argue now, you look at the Sox with Devers and Benintendi. Those
Benintendi,
two.
I love.
They hit 9 RBIs over 3
player,
games.
Right? He is a ball player. That's what he is.
Yeah, he reminds me. He's kind of, because he's not a big guy at all.
He's actually a hockey player dressed like a baseball player.
Yeah, he doesn't
scream
baseball.
He'd be a great hockey player.
All right, so we'll see what Dirk has to say about all that. Is Aaron Judge potentially, is this the real Judge? Is it the first half, somewhere in between? Does he believe in
judge.
The Jays? Touch on a number of things with Dirk. We'll get to that next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVRs on TSN 2. If you can't watch the show live, you can watch it later. Find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca. Check us out on iTunes. We edit some things on iTunes, or at least with the podcast. We'll cut some things out every once in a while. I feel like I need someone to edit what I'm saying around my house these days, Pooley, because my daughter is reaching that stage where her vocabulary is starting to explode, and she's starting to repeat things that she hears around the house.
So mom might be out, and dad might slip up the tongue.
The old earmuffs are being applied every once in a while.
You might need those.
Because I've caught myself multiple times over the past week just dropping the occasional F-bomb or whatever it might
be.
Yeah,
it'll come back to haunt you, my friend.
That
my girls
mind
are pretty good about it, except, well, my first two were. My third one managed to pick up quite a vocab, which, by the way, when she'll call me very often when she's driving to her new job. She's employed, which I'm ecstatic about. But she drives in Chicago, and she'll just casually, in conversation with dad in the morning, like, drop it in there. And you're like, excuse me? She's like, oh, sorry, Dad, somebody just cut me off.
Chicago lifestyle, man.
And then I'm flashing back to when she was your daughter's age. I'm like, Did I teach you that?
Probably did.
And you probably did.
Driving around Boston or Philly or whatever. Jay's back in action tonight. Let's bring in Dirk Hayhurst. And this Baseball Insider is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. What's happening, Dirk?
Not much, guys. How the F are you?
Trying to contain ourselves here, man. I mean, I'm sure you've been down that road. It's a tough grind. You got to watch what you say.
Yes. My wife works with children for a living. So I have to turn off, like, former baseball professional Dirk, where literally it was the most versatile word. It was like we were all Pokemon that could only swear, like only use our name as a swear word with different inflection. And that's pretty much the life inside of a locker room. So, yeah, I understand what it's like to have to watch your lingo.
Well, very often if you didn't use it, you were afraid that nobody understood you. Like you had to use it. As a coach, there were times when if I didn't use it, then you weren't being forceful enough, and your team didn't think you were serious.
That's true. That is so true. It was like, look at this guy with his, like, multi-syllable words. Who the hell does he think he is?
He's not serious.
With a brain.
He's the elitist coach.
He's too smart to bench me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was off for a couple of weeks, and Pooley and I, we've been talking about the numbers game and how to approach the Blue Jays and their current standing. And the obvious, when you look at the actual number, they've chipped away. I think when I left, they were 6.5, maybe 7 out of the second wild card spot. So they've chipped it away. They're down to only being 4 out. But when I left, they were also only ahead of Detroit, Oakland, and Chicago in the American League. And now I return 2 weeks later, and they're only ahead of Detroit, Oakland, and Chicago. So the number has been chipped away at a little bit. But in terms of the amount of teams that they still have to leapfrog over, nothing's changed. So which category matters more to you? Is it the amount of teams ahead of them or the actual number?
Oh, the amount of teams. For sure the amount of teams. I mean, it's easy to be like, oh, yeah, they're only X amount of games back of the wild card, baby. And then you're like, them and, like, you know, every other team except for 3 out of, like, all of the American League. So, you know, it's like the other teams there, and a lot of them are close. I mean, it's close. The bottom is close. It's not very well stratified unless you're like the Astros. Boston and New York are making a run for that to try and kind of keep up with their own push for their division. But look, guys, this is one of those things where, you know, I had people from TSN calling me last night and be like, bro, you think they can do it? You ready to come up and cover the Blue Jays in the postseason? I was like, pump the brakes. Because this is not going to happen. You know, you cannot say the Blue Jays have a shot for the postseason, and then in the second part of the same hit say, so, what do you think they're going to get out of Marco Estrada when they spin him off? Because if that's something they're going to do, why are we talking about the postseason with this team? Because I still think that spinning Marco Estrada off and spinning Jose Bautista off are still priorities. Bigger priorities than trying to gear up or figure out how they're going to compete in the postseason. If they make it to the postseason, it won't be so much that they just came alive. It'll be that all these other teams that were in front of them just kind of face planted or got struck by meteorites or, you know, were in horrific plane crash, something like that. It's going to be one of those epic failure moments where we wonder why this team that had just gotten the tar beat out of it for the entire season and just lost Troy Tulowitzki, just lost Russell Martin, doesn't have a ton of replacements in the pipeline, you know, is spinning off its talent at the trade deadline, finds itself in the postseason hunt, they're going to have some help. And I'm not talking about trades. I'm talking about failure around them in the pack. So that's the number I pay attention to, because at this point in time, with their mindset where it is, it would have to be on everyone else to let them into the dance.
Well, Estrada's value is a difficult conversation for me to get a read on, because with baseball, we're taught at a very young age, it's all about sample size, it's all about the big picture, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And then we're also supposed to believe in this current situation that because he's had 2 or 3 quality starts, now all of a sudden his value is back to where it was supposed to be. So, I mean, what are we supposed to make of his past 2 or 3 outings, and how are we supposed to apply it to the idea that he could get dealt by the end of August, because clearly there was no market for him at the end of July?
Right. He should have been, if he is seriously somebody that's going to get moved, he should have been somebody that another team took a big flyer on. The trouble with Marco Estrada is, you know, you got a guy that's throwing in the high 80s, touching 90, with a straight fastball and a straight changeup. I mean, there's not much there if the changeup isn't working, there's nothing there, in fact. I mean, you have a below-average AAA starter without that pitch. And I feel no guilt saying that about him, being a below-average AAA starter myself. So I'm saying that if you're in that situation, another team's looking at him and saying, I believe that he's going to turn back into the princess that we all believe he was, instead of, you know, the frog, which he is right now. I believe that that's still there, or pumpkin, whatever analogy you need to use here with fairy tale landing stuff to make this work. You just go ahead and use that. But I'm saying that this guy would have been a value get. If you would have went for him and tried to put just a small package together for him, you would have got an extreme value. And what makes me wonder what the rest of the GMs out there were thinking is, were they really looking at this guy and saying he's not worth it? I mean, he would have been a pure rental for some low-level prospects. The Blue Jays would have gave him away. But now the Blue Jays are in a situation to bargain. I mean, and bargain hard. I mean, the Mariners need starting pitching. Dallas Keuchel has went out there and said, like, his team didn't do enough down in Astro country with Francisco Liriano and might have Estrada back as a teammate. The Angels could use a guy like this. The Royals have always been in the hunt for Marco Estrada. I think there's a market out there for him, but I'm surprised that somebody just didn't take, you know, the cheap flyer on this guy and see if it would have panned out to something, because I believe that this is the guy that Marco Estrada is meant to be. I believe when you make the choice to become a guy that throws 90 miles an hour with a changeup, and those are your weapons, that you know what it takes. You're all in at that point. There's no other deception there. Those two pitches have to work, and you have to know, as the owner of that kind of pitcher, he's going to have days where he's not fooling anyone. He's going to get beat up, and it's going to skew your sample. So I think you throw out the bad stuff, and you look at this, and you realize, given his track record going down the stretch towards the postseason, he's been pretty damn good. And I think if you were the guy to take the flyer out on him right now, you'd look like a pretty damn good genius. So that's my thought.
We were talking about Aaron Judge earlier, and last night, I think he got K'd up three times. He struck out in 30 straight games, which is an astonishing stat, yet he's still got an OPS over 1,000, still got 35 home runs in the bank. You can't take that away from him. Still one of the more marketable players in the game because of his size, his stature, the team he plays for. But at the All-Star game, because of what he did in the home run derby, I mean,
everyone's cursed.
Right. It's like Allen Iverson should be sitting here saying, we're talking about the derby here. Not the games, the derby elevated him to, face of baseball status. I remember coming in the next day saying, this is crazy. This is ludicrous. And it's baseball's problem that this is even possible for a guy who's now played 75 games and all of a sudden has taken over the league in terms of Mount Rushmore status. But now you look at the way he's been playing and how disoriented he looks at the plate. I mean, he's got biggest flash in the pan candidate written all over him in years if he can't get this straightened out. And I'm curious to get your take on it, Dirk. I mean, who is this guy? And what do you expect him to get out of this? And if so, do you expect him to take off again?
Look, I think that history paints a great picture for big guys. You know, there are very few of them that sustain for a long time. It's just the nature of the strike zone versus their size. It's the nature of the wear and tear on their body. This guy's super young, and I don't think this is all she wrote. He's going to figure it out again. But here's what happens when you're a guy like Aaron Judge, okay? And everybody in the world tells you you're amazing, and you start to see some sides of yourself that even you didn't think you had, and you start to buy into your own hype. Not in a bad way. I'm not saying that this guy thinks he's amazing or he's giving himself the pat on the back or he's got a huge ego. I'm just saying, when you're a youngster and you hit the big league level and it becomes easy to you, and you've got this echo chamber of people around you telling you how amazing you are all the time, and you start to accomplish big things rather quickly, you kind of lose track of how much effort actually goes into that and how much of your approach worked for you, because you get to a point where you're like, well, I used to go to the plate and hunt that fastball down in a way to drive to the opposite field. And when I got that cookie inside, I turn on it and crush it. But now I'm the home run king. Everybody thinks I'm awesome. Oh, and I'm also the face of baseball. So pretty much anything thrown, I can hit out of the park. Watch, I'll show you. And that might work for like a week. And then pitchers figure you out. Why? Not because pitchers are like super observant. Believe me, I would know. It's because you got data nerds crunching every single at bat, saying you are the most threatening bat maybe in all of baseball right now. Oh, it's our job to get you out and to pass that information on. And so the league adjusts because it's constantly churning variables to beat guys like you. And so then you start to fail, and you wonder, what's wrong with me? What happened? Have I fallen from grace? No, you haven't. You altered your approach, and you shouldn't have done that. But that's a rookie mistake, and now another rookie mistake is flying to the alternate psychological extreme, which is, I once was so awesome, and now I'm so horrible. Neither are true. You're just a good baseball player who altered his approach. Get back to what works. And sometimes getting back to that can be a real zigzag pattern, very different than the stratospheric straight line trajectory that you took to get to superstardom. And it's hard for young kids to pump the brakes, especially when it's hard for them to hear clear coaching in the presence of all this hyperbole. So I think that's where he's at, and I think it's too soon to say he's the next baseball Jesus, and it's also too soon to say he's the next baseball flameout. I think he's just going to be a good player when he figures it all out.
Thank you, Dirk. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Dirk Ahurst, our Baseball Insider, brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville. Yeah, I was reading about that last
Love
night.
The animation.
Yeah, he kind of paints a picture for
he
you.
He absolutely does.
But that All-Star break... Maybe the home run derby affected his approach a little bit. Maybe it inflated his ego a little bit, but it also gave the whole league a few days to break down the tape, find out who this kid is, where is his weakness, because everyone's got one. And just throughout.
Always the case with a young hitter, though. Always.
Always. The league will try to figure you out. And then you usually respond if you're a great player. And I'm not writing off Judge's career, but when you look at this season, he hit the ground running at such a pace. And was hitting home runs at a pace and with power and slugging and his OPS, all of it off the charts. It's almost like
once
a band.
Again, by the way, he was doing that in Yankee Stadium.
Which is a hitter's park. But he's a Yankee, also elevates your profile.
Absolutely.
But it's like a band that drops a debut album and it's outstanding and it goes quadruple platinum. Now we're 2-3 songs into the follow-up and we're like, ooh.
Roger Angel had a great quote. He's the great... Wrote the Boys of Summer, the great books he wrote. And it was about a kid who came up and did exactly what Aaron Judge did. And the quote was, to some, the best comes first, a miserable arrangement.
He's a Yankee, so I don't really
care.
Not
the first one to do it.
We'll get to our best bets recap of busy afternoon next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on Miami tonight. Stanton will hit another home run tonight.
On Fuego.
As on fire
42.
As I've ever seen a player over the course of 35 games.
Looks so easy.
Cubbies win tonight, and Houston's at Arizona. It's tough, and Houston's been struggling recently, but they're paying 210, and they're Houston. Throw down 20, and you can score 82. You can find my picks on Twitter, at TSN 1050 Radio, and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, Pooley, thanks for doing this today,
this was
buddy.
Fun. Good to have you back.
You eased me back into
nice.
It. The Dave Poulin Show. It was great to be a part of it. And you're back on Wednesday, I believe.
I am back to see you Wednesday.
All right, man. Enjoy the round tomorrow. We'll catch you on Wednesday at 4 p.m.
Thank you.
We're out of here. I'll be back tomorrow. Gord Miller in Pooley's seat. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.